This is a Global Class Struggle podcast.
Brought to you by Rebel Youth Magazine. Workers of the world unite.
The head of Indonesia's largest labor union says strikes could soon paralyze the country. Thousands of workers walked out on June 21st and police prepared for widespread protests ahead of an impending fuel price hike. Four water cannons and six armored vehicles were mobilized to secure the Ministry of State-owned Enterprises against demonstrators, and hundreds of police officers and military personnel have been assigned to the area. In the city's satellite industrial centers, thousands of workers downed tools before Friday prayers to protest the government's plan to raise the price of subsidized fuel. Said Iqbal, president of the Confederation of Indonesian Workers Unions, said industrial areas in Bekasi, Sibitong and Sikarang, West Java, had been paralyzed after workers walked out en masse. There are so many military personnel and police officers guarding the demonstration here in Egypt, Hyundai, Lipo, Delta Silicon and MM2100 in Sikarang, Bekasi, because it is expected that thousands of workers will close down the toll road to protest the fuel price hike, he said. Workers in Pulo Gadang and Karawang's industrial zones were expected to join the strike. Indonesian authorities have imposed specific time deadlines, nominally 6 p.m., when protests are required to disperse. Since such laws are only sporadically enforced, it was unclear whether this would inhibit the scale of anticipated protests. Said emphasized that workers had to protest the fuel price increase because it would have a profound effect on living standards, pushing many into poverty. Laborers who are nearly poor will become absolutely poor with this price hike, he told the Jakarta Globe. The increase of the minimum wage announced by the government earlier will become useless, and we reject the government's temporary direct cash assistance scheme because it was a political move created before the 2014 election, and it will make the president and his party appear like Santa Claus. If the government insisted on the fuel price hike, he said, workers in 200 districts across the country would continue demonstrating, while a national strike on August 16 would involve 10 million workers, the day before Independence Day.
On June 13th, the Polish government eliminated the 8-hour working day, a right which was won in 1919. The government claims it is trying to make Poland more competitive for capitalists who want to earn higher profits by imposing lower wages and longer hours. The elimination of the 8-hour day was accomplished by increasing accounting periods for calculating the average amount of hours worked, and by also introducing flexible working hours. In the past, workers had to have a certain resting time between shifts. If shifts were removed from day to day, it could be considered outside normal working time, and workers would then be entitled to overtime pay. The new rules allow bosses to impose much longer working days as long as they cut hours during another time of the year. For workers in some industries and areas, this could mean much longer working days for extensive periods of time, followed by months of unemployment. It is not clear what rights workers who are hired temporarily for a few months will have under this scheme. The amendments to the labor code were drafted by Władysław Kosiniak-Kamysz, a 32-year-old doctor who first ran for the Kraków City Council in 2010. A year later, he had already become Poland's Minister of Labor and Vice Chair of the right-wing Agrarian Polish People's Party. He introduced the amendments, which effectively abolished the guaranteed 8-hour working day, acting on behalf of the country's employers' lobby.
The global trend towards a sharp decline of labor's economic share is discussed by the International Labor Organization in its Global Wage Report 2012-2013. The ILO report summarizes some of the evidence this way. The OECD has observed that over the period from 1990 to 2009, the share of labor compensation in national income declined in 26 out of 30 developed economies for which data were available, and calculated that the median labor share of national income across these countries fell considerably from 66.1% to 61.7%. Looking beyond the advanced economies, the ILO World of Work Report 2011 found that the decline in labor income share was even more pronounced in many emerging and developing countries, with considerable declines in Asia and North Africa, and more stable but still declining wage shares in Latin America. The U.S. labor share of income has fallen from around 68-70% of GDP through the 1970s to just 63% by 2009-2010. For other major capitalist countries, the trend is similar. In Japan, the labor share dropped from 80% in the late 1970s to 64% in 2010. The German figures showed a drop from 73% in 1974 to 64% in 2010. Between 1999 and 2011, average labor productivity in developed economies increased more than twice as much as average wages. In the United States, real hourly labor productivity increased by about 85% since 1980, while real hourly compensation increased by only around 35%. In Germany, labor productivity surged by almost a quarter over the past two decades, while real monthly wages remained flat. The global trend has resulted in a change in the distribution of national income, with the workers' share decreasing while capital income shares increased in a majority of countries. Even in China, where wages roughly tripled over the last decade, GDP increased at a faster rate than the total wage bill, and hence the labor share went down. The ILO concludes that the drop in labor share is due to technological progress, trade globalization, the expansion of financial markets, and decreasing union density, which have eroded the bargaining power of labor. Financial globalization, in particular, may have played a bigger role than previously thought.
The Interregional Trade Union of Auto Workers, ITUA, scheduled a strike at Ford in Vsevolodsk, Russia, over the issues of wages and working conditions. The ITUA reports that Ford management in Vsevolodsk, 25 kilometers east of St. Petersburg, has been informed of the planned strike on June 24. Earlier during the collective bargaining round, workers rejected an 8.6% wage raise proposed by the administration. Out of this figure, 6.6% accounts for inflation, leaving only a 2% increase in real terms. The average monthly wage at the plant is roughly 940 euros. Workers demand a hike to 1,150 euros, roughly 50,000 rubles. We understand that the real inflation level in Russia is higher than the official figure. Labor productivity at our plant is very high. However, our wages are not enough to provide decent education for our children, ensure quality health care and a normal retirement, have good vacations and comfortable housing, says Alexander Kashitsyn, president of the ITUA local at Ford Vsevolodsk. Kashitsyn notes that company profits are constantly rising, and the share of labor costs in overall expenses is low. Other issues at the plant include poor working conditions, inadequate health and safety training, and lack of breaks due to high temperature in the summer required by Russian labor laws. In November-December 2012, Ford workers conducted a work-to-rural protest over the working conditions. The plant is well known for its militant union local, which has held eight strikes since 2006.